It's a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, the Heat take care of business, easily beating the Phoenix Suns to move up in the Eastern Conference standings.
Double-doubles from both Justice Winslow and Hassan Whiteside, and we'll spotlight a pair of performances from the game and answer the tweets that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRec Sports, and I write for Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSide and FanRec Sports, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
The Heat beat the Suns 125-103. Taking care of business there, David. Look, the Suns are not a good team. They are not a team that are trying to win games. Miami is a team that is trying to win games, and that's what they did. And I think the story of the game really was the points off of turnovers. And I want to start there. 29 points off of 18 turnovers. David, we talked a lot about how Miami needed to start forcing more turnovers after the All-Star break. And specifically to get points off of those turnovers, create easy offense. We're seeing guys like Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow step up and create those turnovers and push the ball in transition and get those easy buckets on offense. That was on full display again, 29 points off of 18 turnovers, and it was consistent throughout the entire game.
Yeah, it's a sharp contrast to what we saw against the Lakers when there was the exact opposite, where the Lakers were forcing turnovers, and because of their quick pace of play, they got a lot of points on those turnovers. Meanwhile, Miami was able to force a lot of turnovers but couldn't capitalize on those because they just didn't have the speed to match up with the Lakers' young players. But on a case like tonight, they just were able to get ahead of Phoenix players, were able to drive to the basket, get past them. Look, Phoenix isn't very good defensively. That was pretty obvious there as Miami was able to get buckets relatively easily. But still, being able to force those turnovers, I can't help but think, and I know this is something we had floated a few weeks ago, that Wade's return has changed the way that Miami plays defense. Like, his impacting on passing lanes is obvious even at this point in his career, where he's not as fast as he once was. And I wonder if that's kind of been absorbed by the rest of the players on this team, because it just seems like they're really trying to, you know, get in the way of passes and break, you know, things up. They were diving to the floor for loose balls, trying to change things up. If there was a moment's hesitation from a ball handler, these Heat players were, you know, capitalizing on that, trying to intercept these passes and break up a rhythm when they were dribbling the ball. So it just looked really, really comfortable out there for them against a bad team, but still very good patterns to develop throughout the rest of the season.
The starting lineup was interesting tonight too, going for the second straight game with Goran Dragic, Josh Richardson, Luke Babbitt, James Johnson, and Hassan Whiteside in that starting unit. Tyler Johnson, who was questionable to play, did get some minutes in the game, meaningful minutes in that game, entered for the first time in the first quarter. And so I want to go to this lineup here and look, Luke Babbitt, who started at power forward for most of last season for the Heat, he's now being slotted in at small forward. James Johnson giving them some size at the four here, and Josh Richardson sliding over to the two guard position. And look, the Heat, you know, during the broadcast, they keep putting up graphics about, you know, Josh Richardson averaging almost 3 more points per game from the two guard as opposed to when he plays the three. I think there's only like an 8 game sample size. I wouldn't read too much into it versus like a 56 game sample of playing small forward. But the point is of it, I think that Josh Richardson does work really well next to Goran Dragic in the backcourt. And Luke Babbitt, he's given him enough shooting in the starting unit. James Johnson's playing well enough. And then Hassan Whiteside had a strong game too. We'll get to him later, but I know specifically you were excited with what you saw from Luke Babbitt.
Yeah, look, I think he really does a hell of a job spacing the floor. Miami's offense, as we've noted a number of times, can get bogged down. They're looking for somebody that's the release valve there when the shot clock starts to expire after a number of dribble drives that don't result in an open look or anything like that. They swing the ball, and Luke Babbitt's been there because, look, I mean, a lot of guys just kind of stay off a shooter like Babbitt, and he has the range where as long as he has enough daylight, he's going to knock those down at a pretty comfortable rate. And I think he provided that impact last year. We saw him shoot over 40%, even over 45% for a number of months when he was with Miami last season, and I think he's starting to get into that same comfortable rhythm. Look, he wasn't playing much in Atlanta, but he's certainly helping Miami's offense this year. And look, we've noted before how Wayne Ellington has that same kind of impact, particularly in clutch moments in fourth quarters. Babbitt can do it early on because you know he's not going to play late in games because of his defensive inefficiency. But as long as he's able to space the floor and give Miami that kind of comfortable lead like they had in the first quarter today, it's enough for Miami's defense to kind of sustain against a bad team like Phoenix.
Yeah, all 11 of his shots came from three-point range. He was 4 of 7 in that first quarter for 12 points. That's where all of his points came from. He didn't make a shot for the rest of the game. And so that's kind of your Babbitt experience. And I think, you know, you mentioned his defense. The Suns really attacked Luke Babbitt in that first quarter. They got him involved in every pick-and-roll situation that they possibly could. And a lot of times it was very effective.
It was.
And fortunately for Luke Babbitt, he made 4 of those 7 three-pointers he took in that first quarter. So he wasn't a negative. He actually was a plus 7 as a plus minus in the game. Had he not been so hot, had he put up that what we deemed the Babbitt box stat line last year, 0-3, 0 rebounds, 0 points, if he had done that, he would have been yanked a lot earlier than the 26 minutes that he did log in the game. And I think with that, if Babbitt is the starter, if he's going to be sort of this placeholder starter that you could sort of play extended minutes if he's hot, and then when Wayne Ellington does eventually return, that does give Miami a lot more three-point shooting. That could be really valuable down the stretch of this season. I do want to highlight Justice Winslow a little bit. I know we're going to talk about him quite a bit when we get to the Twitter comments part of the show. But one of the things that stuck out to me early in the game, it seemed like he was getting a lot more lift on his jumper. It's just specifically getting up higher when he was on those jump shots and stuff like that. And then, of course, that crazy dunk at the end of the game, you know, in garbage time. Mm-hmm. That just sort of electrified, you know, the bench there. That really sealed the deal for me. I think, look, Justice Winslow missed quite a bit of time with a knee injury earlier in the season. I think that was still bothering him up until maybe, I don't know, a week ago, because we talk a lot about how he's not finishing around the rim and or at a higher rate and stuff like that. Or for most of the season, he hasn't been. And I went back and I was watching some Justice Winslow clips, and it doesn't look like he was getting the lift that we were accustomed to seeing, like when he was a rookie, for instance. He wasn't getting as much lift around the basket. I don't even know if it's a touch problem as much as it's a, you know, you got to get a lot of lift when you're getting around the rim to finish consistently at the NBA level. I think he's getting more lift on the jumper. He's getting more lift near the rim, which is why his efficiency has gone up in that regard. And then I haven't seen him dunk in who knows how long. So that dunk was not only electrifying, but it was a really good sign to see that. I think Justice Winslow is as good a shape as he's been in all season. I know we're going to touch again on Winslow a little bit later, but I really wanted to get to that point because that's really what stuck out to me. I mean, the guy had a crazy game. Let's see, what else can we talk about? Bam Adebayo didn't play until garbage time. No meaningful minutes. Spoelstra after the game on Bam said there's a lot of on why he played limited minutes. There's a lot of guys. We're still working through the rotation. The rotation will be whatever is necessary. What do you think about that, David? Do you think that this is going to be a trend with Bam?
You know, we did talk about once Roddy McGruder came back in the lineup, whose minutes would be impacted. I think it's a number of players are just going to see less and less playing time. James Johnson didn't play much, only had 21 minutes of play, even though he was the starter. I just think that's the case going for the rest of the season, to be honest with you. There's a lot of options there. And Spoelstra can do different things, and he likes the impact that different players have in different ways, the versatility that they bring defensively. That's always going to be a huge plus for anybody. So, you know, unfortunately, Adebayo as a rookie is probably going to be the one whose minutes get cut out the most. I don't know if that's the right decision, to be honest with you, but as long as Whiteside keeps playing at a high level, that's probably the best way. Look, at this point in their respective careers, Whiteside's singular impact is greater than what Adebayo brings. As much as we love his energy and rebounding and everything else, his athleticism and his versatility defensively, to be honest with you, I think Whiteside, if he's still playing well, impacts an opposing team's offense much more.
Yeah, the Heat are approaching every game right now like it's a playoff game, and you would understand then maybe why they're not playing a rookie as much. I wonder if Bam's role now, I agree with you, by the way. I think Bam is going to see a lot fewer minutes just because it's the final 20 plus games of the season. And this is the home stretch, and you can't really risk having a rookie out there. As good as and as impressive as Bam has been for a rookie, I wonder if his role now becomes he's the guy you go to when Whiteside's having an off night, and maybe that's and his minutes are going to fluctuate a lot because of that, right? Because we know how Whiteside's performance could be inconsistent, so maybe that's his role. Yeah. Let's look at the Eastern Conference standings really quick. With the win, Miami moves up to seventh place because the Bucks lost to the Pacers tonight. So the Heat move up into seventh place in the East. Cleveland beat Detroit. So now Detroit is, I think, five games back of the eighth spot. So that's it. They're done. I think they were already done, but they're super done now. Like, they're well done. Yeah, that's where we're at right now. So Miami, seventh place in the
East.
We'll go to Twitter next and take some of your questions or comments that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. But first, a quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On NBA, which has revamped its format. In addition to hosting Locked On Heat on a daily basis, David and I will be hosting Locked On NBA every Tuesday. It'll be a digestible show, just 20 to 30 minutes long, delivering the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day.
Just like you're subscribed to Locked On Heat to find out as much information as you can about your favorite team, Locked On NBA is your first stop for the most important headlines and analysis from around the NBA. We break down games, talk about the hot stories of the day, and just make sure that you leave us a review in iTunes, and please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app.
Let's go to Twitter and see the questions and comments that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Let's start with this one from Ming, who writes in, "I've said it for a long time. Justice needs to be extended. He will be huge for us in the playoffs. Maybe less James Johnson in the playoffs." And by extended, I wrote back to Ming on Twitter. I was like, "Do you mean by his contract or do you mean by minutes?" He said both, but he meant minutes.
Oh, really?
Justice Winslow in this game played 10 more minutes than James Johnson, which is pretty interesting. 31 minutes for Winslow, 21 minutes for JJ. David, this is something that at least I think I've brought up in the past. If James Johnson's not going to be effective, and specifically if Justice Winslow is going to outplay him, I could see Winslow getting more minutes down the stretch than James Johnson. He is a little bit more effective in that ball handling role, I think, than James Johnson has been lately. He's even a better shooter at this point than James Johnson, who I think has made one. I can remember one 3-pointer that he's made off the top of my head in like the last 2 months. So
James Johnson.
Yeah. James Johnson. And Justice Winslow seems to have a little bit more going for him right now. Look, if this is the trend that continues, I could see Spoelstra. Look, Spoelstra had no qualms about playing Winslow heavy minutes and in huge roles when he was a rookie in the playoffs. So I have no doubt that he'll play Winslow in a major way in the postseason this time around, especially if he's playing like this.
If you had told me at the start of the season that Justice Winslow would be out shooting James Johnson, I think I would have been greatly surprised. But that's absolutely been the case. But tonight, in particular, he had 12 rebounds. Compared to only two for James Johnson. And now I know James Johnson played the bulk of his minutes alongside Hassan Whiteside, but you can see a difference as far as their overall energy levels. Winslow, a lot like Adebayo when he plays regularly, attacking the basket on missed shots, corralling those rebounds, and then pushing the ball up the court quickly so that he can initiate a fast break. I think that's the kind of offense and defense combination that Spoelstra is looking for as we make this playoff push towards the end of the season there. So I could see it. I could see that him getting a lot of minutes. Unfortunately, James Johnson he hasn't played as well. He's had moments throughout the course of the season, but overall I'd say he's been very inconsistent and has had a pretty bad stretch, particularly offensively of late. So if he's going with a hot hand, Winslow is certainly that.
And it seems like both James Johnson and Winslow play better when they come off the bench in a weird way. But I don't know if James Johnson insertion and like that swap of James Johnson and Winslow at that four spot sort of came at the same time as Tyler Johnson getting hurt and Miami having to switch up their lineups. I wonder how much effect that'll have when Tyler Johnson does come back and maybe Spoelstra goes back to that Dragic, Tyler, Josh Richardson, Winslow, Whiteside starting five. I wonder, or if he'll stick with James Johnson and then just bring back Tyler Johnson or start bringing Tyler off the bench. I mean, there's so many things that he could do at this point. It'll be something to keep in mind. And that, of course, is going to play a major impact on who's getting minutes at what point, especially in the postseason. So
would you rather start Justice Winslow at this point over James Johnson?
I really like what Winslow's doing when he comes off the bench as far as being able to kind of handle the ball on that second unit. And he did a lot of that in this game against Phoenix where we were wondering if, you know, Dwayne Wade kind of running the second unit is going to impact or eat into Justice Winslow's time with the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
And in this game against Phoenix, Justice Winslow was really the one facilitating the offense, and Dwayne Wade was playing off the ball a whole lot.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. I think Winslow could sort of do that from the starting spot or from the bench, and I don't have an issue with him doing it against opposing starters. So I would prefer having James Johnson and Tyler Johnson both coming off the bench again and sort of anchoring that second unit. And whatever else has to happen around that, I think that would be really good for the second unit to have those two guys, especially in the playoffs, have those two guys kind of keeping, you know, keeping things afloat while the other guys are resting. What do you think?
I don't know. I think Spoelstra tends to prefer Johnson's ability to guard larger players, which I think that was the case today with the front court, Phoenix's front court being Tyson Chandler and Dragan Bender. I think he prefers having him match up better with a guy like Bender, who's 7'1", I think. He's a large player, obviously. But, you know, Winslow is versatile enough, but, you know, he can handle those larger matchups. I just think that it kind of minimizes his impact defensively, where he's more of a kind of a rover free safety type player, where he just intercepts passes and things of that sort, kind of plays off ball a little bit. Of course, and he can match up pretty well with, you know, guards and larger front court players. But I think – for me, I think at this point, I'd rather have James Johnson starting, to be honest with you.
You're right. You convinced me.
All right. Nice.
I'm on your side now, James Johnson. You're right, because of his size. He needs to be – he gives them more size and more versatility. Like, you know, you could play Olynyk at the four, but he doesn't give you the versatility or foot speed that James Johnson does.
Absolutely not.
And Winslow doesn't give you the size that Olynyk or James Johnson gives you. So, And then Winslow can come off the bench and sort of fill in where he needs to be, because he is more versatile in more ways than James Johnson is at this point, who's best – asset at this point might just be being a big guy who can sort of move a little bit.
Yep.
I mean, that's kind of his best attribute at this point. So, all right, this next one, we're going to do like two different tweets here.
Okay.
One comes from Claudia, a Patreon supporter, and she writes in, is a first round playoff the best we can hope for? Do you see any team we could beat in a 7-game series to make it to the second round? And then Taylor writes in, the Celtics is who we would prefer to play in the playoffs out of the top three, right? Maybe Cleveland can fall to four and we can get the six.
Okay.
I think by the six, he means Toronto.
Sure.
So kind of two different questions asking the same.
No, I think he's thinking if we could climb up to the sixth seed, we would face the Celtics in the third seed.
Yeah, you're right. That makes way more sense than Drake lyrics.
Millennials, no.
Yeah, the six. Yeah, I get it. No, the six seed makes way more sense. Yeah. You're right.
It's funny that you went straight to the Drake lyrics for that.
I've disappointed myself already.
Yeah. And this will be our last episode as co-host of Locked On Heat. Thank you for listening. I'm out. So let's see. That's it. It's interesting questions there. I think they kind of tie in together. As far as Claudia's question is concerned, like, I don't know how high. Like, I had hoped that we could get as high as a fifth seed. It depends on. I didn't anticipate Indiana playing at such a high level. I still don't know how they're doing it, to be honest with you. I've got to watch that game. I was watching the Heat game, so I really didn't focus much on the Pacers game. But on a night where Oladipo didn't have a particularly great night, they got some tremendous shooting from Bojan Bogdanovic. I mean, 29 points. Mm-hmm. That's what kept him in the game there. So I know they're getting some key contributions from other guys other than Oladipo, but at the same time, I still don't know how they're stringing together 7 wins out of their last 10 games. Like, this is really
– I mean,
really
we're going to – I really want to talk about this when we record Locked On NBA here in a few minutes. But I think Milwaukee lost that game more than Indiana won it. But you're right. Like, I also credit what's his face?
Nate McMillan. Yeah.
Because they do a tremendous job of moving the ball and moving the ball in the paint and into and out of the paint. In a way that kind of is reminiscent of those Frank Vogel teams that played the Heat in the playoffs, where like specifically David West was facilitating a lot.
Right.
That was a much slower version, but they also did a good job of moving in and out of the paint. And this team does it at a faster pace. It's different. It doesn't look the same, but it's sort of funny that both teams were able to do that in a different way. But we'll get to that anyway. What sticks out about these two questions to me is the fact that these are even being asked right now. And what I mean by that is, you know, it was only maybe a few weeks ago that we were wondering if Miami was even going to be in the playoffs, regardless of if they'd be moving up in seeds, you know? So there is a point right now where if you're Miami and they've played Boston, they've played Toronto well, I think Cleveland would give them a hard time. Just I don't know who they have to throw at LeBron. That's a question that everybody's asking in the league all the time for the last 20 years.
That's why he's
James Johnson, Justice Winslow, I guess. Yeah, I mean, but I don't know. You've got some confidence playing Boston. You've got some confidence playing Toronto. You've got to start looking at this and saying, like, look, do we start sort of strategizing where we want to be based on how the top three is playing out? You don't think that they do that at all? That they should? They won't. You're right. They won't do it. But do you think that they should do it?
I guess so. But I think they need to win. Look, there's still, 19, 20 games left in the season at this point. Mm-hmm. They need to win a bulk of those to kind of figure out whether or not they can afford to play around with the numbers a little bit and try to plant themselves either in the sixth seed or seventh seed, you know. Of course, that depends on whether or not Indiana and Washington and Philadelphia continue to win, Milwaukee especially, before they can really start figuring out, you know, who they want to face in the first round. This team, this front office, and Eric Spoelstra as coach, they're not going to do that. They're going to try to win every game. I can't see that. Unless they're in the last game or two of the season and it doesn't really matter. You know, if they're already assured that they're going to be whatever seed they're going to wind up as, they're not going to sit starters. They're not going to rest players. That was something they did during the Big Three era when they could afford to flip the switch. This isn't that same kind of team. But as far as Claudia and Taylor's questions are concerned, I think a first-round playoff series at this point is probably the best we could hope for. If we had been able to hold on to the four seed the way we were a month ago, that's a different question, a different answer specifically. But I think for now, I don't know that we can advance past any of the top three teams, and I don't know that we can get to as high as the fifth seed and face like a fourth seed, you know, in Indiana or whomever.
I feel like this team could beat one of these guys in the first round. And it's not so much a reflection of this Heat roster. I'm not very confident in this team. Again, I don't think that this is a particularly good Heat team, but I'm not that confident in either of the top three teams in the East right now. I mean, Cleveland has issues still after the trade deadline. They still have obvious holes. And they'll get Kevin Love back, and we'll see what they look like after that. But, you know, Boston, they can't really score on offense. I mean, a Miami-Boston series might have final scores of 90 to 87, you know, like it very well could be one of those type of series if that happens. And Miami can win games like that. Toronto, I don't see it just because how deep they are. But then again, like Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan have not been good in the playoffs. Who knows? Like Toronto is known to drop their first game. I mean, it's almost like you get a one game handicap in any game you play against Toronto in the postseason.
Yeah.
So maybe that helps, you know, that can sort of flip home court advantage and you can start going down that road. And of winning that's a series like that. So I don't know. Obviously nobody's ruling it out, but I don't know if it's the fact that they just beat one of the worst teams in the NBA by 20 points, but I kind of feel good about it. I don't know.
You're getting a little cocky compared to like a week ago when we were talking about that Lakers loss after they ran us off the court.
I'm up and down like Whiteside.
So who would you prefer to face then? I know we've talked about it before when Rowan was on the show last week anyway, we answered a question similar to this. I thought it would be the Celtics. Yeah, I still think it was the Celtics, to be honest with you. Toronto, they can create matchup problems. I don't know what's going to happen with Lowry and DeRozan, which is part of the problem, is that they could go off for 40 on any night or they could, you know, break apart. But Valanciunas, you know, spreading the floor a little bit is a matchup problem for Whiteside. And I thought when they faced each other in the playoffs a couple seasons ago, I thought Whiteside would dominate that matchup, and that was far from the case. So I don't know what to expect.
Yeah, and they even have like Jakob Poeltl who can come in, and he's right really now a better option than he's been better than Valanciunas on a lot of games. I mean, he's sort of like that's sort of their Whiteside Bam Adebayo, except both. I mean, I don't know if Valanciunas would be better than Whiteside at this point, but he does handle that matchup a little bit better than Whiteside does.
He does, yeah.
I think in a vacuum, Whiteside would be a better player, but just when they go head-to-head, it's a problem. Let's get to our spotlight performances next, but before we move on to the final segment, let's go to iTunes and see if we have any new reviews. David, how's it looking?
We don't have any new ones per se, but this is one that I dug a little deep for. We're still stuck at 94. We're still hoping to get more, so please feel free to continue to log in there, leave us a review, please a five-star review if you can, and leave a comment on what we're doing well and what you can expect out of the show. But this one from TRE SWM, Trey Swim, writes, Great content for Heat fans. It's a ton of quality content from guys who actually watch each game. Thank you. And not just the normal garbage and generalities, but podcasts that don't dive as deep into the game. So thank you, Trey Swim. We appreciate that. We do watch these games so that we can comment and break them down for you, the listener. So please, again, make sure that you go on iTunes if you haven't already and leave us a new review.
Spotlight player time. David, who you got?
I've got a guy who was a little quiet, Goran Dragic, but not in a bad way. He had a really efficient night in just 23 minutes of play, managed to log in 17 points on 7 of 10 shooting, had 5 assists to go with that, and just looked like he was in a comfortable rhythm there with everybody else kind of stepping up. He just had the opportunity to – he had a lot of wide open shots, but he was also to create opportunities for himself and for others.
You talk about wide open shots. There was one play in the second half where I don't know if Elfrid Payton just forgot that defense happens after offense or what happened. But
can I go on a rant here? You know, I don't have to cover him 41 times a year anymore, but I never liked Elfrid Payton. I know he was wildly popular in Orlando for some reason. Maybe it was just the hair. Maybe it was the expectations of a lottery pick. And even now when he's in Phoenix and he has a 20-point night or a useless triple-double that doesn't mean anything, everybody's like, oh, Orlando gave up on Payton too soon. No, they didn't. Payton was garbage. He was terrible. He's terrible on defense despite this reputation that he earned at University of Louisiana Lafayette, going up against Division III players or whatever.
Is that Sun Belt? Go Sun Belt. I don't know. I made that up. I might be giving a shout out to Sun Belt for no reason.
I don't know. Is there like a swamp tournament or something like that, wherever they play? I don't know.
There's a Bayou Conference. The Swamp Bucket Conference.
Well, wherever it is that they play or whoever it is that they play, he was terrible. And he's not very good defensively, and he can't score worth a damn either, except for these occasional buckets. And then he has these nights where it's like, oh, look at him. He's scoring in high bunches. It's like, yeah, those are useless. He always has like an April, late March swoon, yep, where everybody's like, oh, my God, this is it. Payton's finally going to turn to the player that we thought we were getting when we drafted 10th. That's like, nope, that was just a tease.
It'll make you feel good that my signed photograph of Goran Dragic that I have, he's laying it up over Elfrid Payton, who is not playing any defense.
Of course.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And he didn't play any defense tonight either. And there was that play again, and he just watched Goran Dragic just dribble it right by him. Just dribbled right by him. Like, Goran Dragic, I don't think he was doing this, but he did look like he intentionally slowed down a little bit, as like almost like he was high-stepping to the basket, you know what I mean? And then just laid it up. He was just like, is it really going to be this easy? Okay.
Deion Sanders, like, kind of slowing down as he enters in the end.
Exactly.
Wow.
Taunting a little bit, holding the ball in back behind him. Dragic did a nice game, 7 of 10 shooting, really tidy game. Like, that's the sort of thing you want from your point guard, right? Is high efficiency. You know, he only played 23 minutes because Miami was able to rest their starters down the stretch, which is going to be really good for them because they're going on. Onto the road to play Washington in the second night of a back-to-back here. So Dragic only playing 23 minutes. That's huge for him too.
Absolutely.
My spotlight player was, I can't believe I'm doing this right now, Hassan Whiteside. What a change. 25 minutes, 10 of 13 from the field, scored 24 points. He had 14 rebounds.
Yeah.
There was a couple of defensive rebounds that he gathered and then just dribbled down the court. There was that one series in the first half where he grabs a defensive rebound. Yeah, grabs a defensive rebound, pushes the ball down the court. It seemed like a bunch of the Phoenix Suns, right where he was like at half court, a bunch of the Phoenix players were like, okay, he'll pass it to one of the ball. Oh, no, he's not passing it to any of the ball handlers. And then they sort of reconvened around him, and he hit the spin move.
Who did he spin on?
And laid it up at the rim.
Who do you remember him spinning on?
I don't even remember who it was. Was it Elfrid Payton?
It was Elfrid Payton. Of course it was. The traffic cone with the hair.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Whiteside. I mean, look, he had 2 assists in the game, 2 steals, 3 blocks. Only had 1 turnover, despite him freely dribbling the ball up the court by himself. I mean, that was a unicorn moment, the spin move was. And I got to give him a shout out. I had to give him a positive spotlight for once.
Yeah, look, at first, there were a couple of easy dunks there by Tyson Chandler, the former Heat nemesis Tyson Chandler. And so I'm thinking to myself, oh, what the hell is Whiteside doing? You know, he was launching that 17, 18 footer a little too frequently there. He was giving up those buckets to Chandler, and I was really, really starting to get worried that, you know, it was going to be another bad Whiteside performance, as we've seen so many of those this season. But when they showed it on replay, you can pretty clearly tell that it was Babbitt who was off of his man. Like, wound up with an open shot for Dragon Bender, or Dragon Bender in one case found a wide open Tyson Chandler because, you know, Whiteside was helping on the ball handler, and then he was able to swing it directly to Dragon Bender, who was wide open because Luke Babbitt was nowhere near where he was supposed to be. So it was just a failed rotation there, and it wasn't on Whiteside. I can't believe we're saying this, but yeah, it looked like he played a much more engaged and solid performance defensively and offensively. So we need that from him. And he said that after the game too. He said that, you know, he was locked in, that he thinks the team in general is locked in, playing for something now. There's a sense of urgency there, something that you and I had questioned, particularly last week after that Lakers loss. But it seems like they might be a little bit more aware at this point what's at stake, and hopefully they can continue to win games and maybe climb up the Eastern Conference standings.
His 13 shots were more than anybody else took on the Heat, and it doesn't feel like that, you know. It felt like his offense was coming his points were coming into the flow of the offense. He was getting set up by his teammates. He was setting solid screens in the pick and roll, and that contributed to his easy shots, as well as him, you know, basically being Giannis tonight for no reason. But
did you see him hit that 3-pointer even though the shot clock expired?
Yeah, I mean, why not?
He's got legitimate rage.
We mentioned Valanciunas earlier in the show. He's taking 1 3-pointer a game for Toronto. He's hitting it at, I think, 45% the last time I checked.
Really?
There's no reason. Yeah, there's no reason why Whiteside couldn't take 1 3-pointer a game. It just forces the defense to disrespect it a little bit because they know it's coming eventually. Kelly Olynyk also, 20 minutes. He had 15 points on 5-7 shooting, 2-4 from 3-point range. Good to see him sort of back in the groove. And he was the backup center behind Whiteside. So just a lot of good. That's 45 minutes between Whiteside and Olynyk of really solid center play. And then, of course, the last 3 minutes, they yanked all their starters and just played basically Udonis Haslem at center. Nice. But and Bam Adebayo. But two good performances by Miami's top two centers. And you hope that when both of them are going like that, and you sort of have that thunder and lightning aspect to the center position, the Heat get really dangerous, specifically on offense, because it's a little bit of that change of pace that could be disruptive for a defense and hard to sort of control and contain.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of tonight's game against the Wizards. You could send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat, and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.